and locally of the Communist Party. I think now the generally the situation has very much changed, except for a few irresponsible adventurists.
Would you say that in the campus too, the your wing is much stronger than the Chinese wing?
I think so. Although in the university, political activity, the atmosphere is rather unfavorable generally for open political activity in the present administration. And the recent events after the strike and the police assaults and the aftermath of the situation, there is a generally difficult internal situation within the campus for sober political activity. But in generally, I think we have asserted ourselves, and the position is at least to overcome the responsible provocations have been overcome now. A disciplined approach to political left political activity has now is well on the way.
Turning to this other more important aspect, the United Front, how was it initiated?
Originally, you mean?
Yes, 63.
Well, the force of circumstances, the situation in the country, that the weakness of the SLFP, which was demonstrated in 1960 when the rightist elements completely took control of the party, and subsequently the economic situation in the country and the demand by the rank and file of the trade union movement and the left movement, general public opinion that unless there is left unity, the right reaction in the SLFP and the pro-imperialist UNP will sweep into power and there is no future for the country. I mean, the circumstances...
Did the Samajwadis agree not to criticize the Soviet Union in public, that former obstacle?
Generally, there was, our agreement was more on a trade union level than on a party political level. And so there was implication. And in the general attitude of the Samaja Party, there was implication. And our main agreement was on the trade union.
But weren't you hoping to be a parliamentary force too, as a united front?
Of course. And since then we have been developing and coming, the understanding has been much closer politically.
What led up to the breaking of this front and the eventual LSSP coalition with the SLFP government?
Well, I mean, this is a matter which not with proper for me to
make comments. No.
No, I think I must...
I'm sorry, I'm not even
here. No, is there much more to discuss?
Just a few general questions, if I may ask. In fact, rising from this unity, I was wondering, unity talks and so forth through the decades, I was wondering if the Communist Party has tended to concentrate too much on tactical measures like unity and forget broad strategy and broad policy.
There has been that tendency, thinking in terms of personalities and discussion of unity rather than the main success of unity depends on the strength of the party, the broad campaigns for correct national policy, some extent, we have been thinking in terms of personal negotiations and understanding with representatives of the other parties, rather than influencing the parties through pressure from the public support that the party can get by broad campaigns and campaigning our policy and building the party. That is true.
If you are thinking in terms of public image, that you haven't done something which you could do as a Marxist-based party, present a comprehensive Marxist economic policy as an alternative.
That has been, big, we recognize the major weakness of the party has been that we have not been able to draft economic program for the country, which because of limitation of cadres and our, that has been the great drawback.
Yeah, and apart from control of factors of production which you asked for, there are certain practical demands of management and marketing and things which any government will have to solve.
And the overall general economic development program. That is true. We have not been able to accept broad slogans and platitudes.
Yes, I was thinking there was too much emphasis on catchwords like industrialization, nationalization.
Yes.
Perhaps this has been due to the fact that you have been in opposition and therefore practically oriented,
And also the fact, I think, we have a much bigger political influence than our
membership.
And naturally you are caught up in day-to-day problems and activities, and the opportunities for a serious study of the economic problems and to draw up a clear program on the various aspects of economic needs has been neglected.
You had a membership drive in 1960. With what success?
The generally the party has satisfied with the success both in the youth front and youth organizations, which is a broader recruitment, and party.
Is the extent of the membership of the party a secret or? How did the Sino-Indian War affect party membership? I was wondering whether it tended to be an obstacle, to be something detrimental to your...
It had. Fortunately, we were able to take a correct line and explain to the party, and there has been no adverse effect from the situation, unlike in India.
I was wondering whether there tended to be too many council worshippers in the party, as a council being parliamentary.
Well, that reformist approach, parliamentarianism, there is that tendency. It's there, it's not visible in the party.
And for instance, now, you are a proletarian party, but you have for the moment adopted a policy of cooperating with the national bourgeoisie. But at the same time, you have another line of trying to encompass all the Marxist groups in one body. Isn't this a dual policy, looking towards the national bourgeoisie and yet trying to bring the Samaj into a united front?
Well, in the objective situation and the realities of the problem, to the need of a national front which will include the national bourgeoisie, the anti-imperialist section of the National Bourgeoisie. It's bound to happen, isn't it? And the recognition by the working class of the need to cooperate with the employer class, and certain sections of the working class are both employers and workers, and in a society where the economic development has not proceeded very far and the working class is comparatively small, so we have to think in terms of countries with a developed working class where concentration of workers in certain industries is very developed, but here the working class is not developed, and the association of the peasantry and the working class, the demarcation line is not so sharp. So,
but doesn't this mean that you have postponed the mass struggle?
Even among our trade unions, you find they would go to the Communist Party for all their trade union demands and struggles, but they vote for Mrs. Bandaranaike. I mean, they realize that politically they need the general approach of the SLFP leadership, progressive leadership, for national interests of the country. The working class is recognized.
But there's a more important question arising normally where there's a small working class, say as in 1917 in Russia. Where they cooperate with the bourgeoisie, they head it. They're the vanguard. But here, there's room for criticism that the working class are behind, in a sense, hanging on to the Makinian's skirt.
You know, in Russia, even 1917, although it was the most backward country in Europe, but it had a developed, the concentration of capital in Russia was greater than any other European country.
It had big
factories and a developed working class.
Uh-huh.
It had a strong working class and a concentration of big factories. Monopoly capital was more developed in Russia than in other European countries. So there was a strong working class. In Ceylon, we don't have that. And so with the setting up of industrial ventures now with help of the socialist countries, we might in time to come develop a bigger working class, and our tactics may change in the future, but in the initial stages, in 1956, we had hardly any industry.
In fact, what about the structure of the party? Isn't it based on the concept of democratic centralism?
Yes.
But there has been criticism that this is a euphemism really for dictatorship from the top, that people, membership from below, don't impose themselves.
Actually, the influence of the party is because of its strict adherence to democratic centralism. I mean, we have no means to influence the rank and file membership unless they are confident that we have their support through their representatives from the periphery.
How much working class, how many working class members are there in the central committee? Rough percentage.
Entire working class, entire membership is closely connected with the working class in the sense of trade union officials and trade union work. The central committee membership is directly
connected
and an offshoot of the trade union movement.
No, I was wondering whether in the, say, the annual conferences, decisions of the Central Committee are ever altered. It would seem that they are generally amenable to decisions taken in the committee.
No, in the Communist Party we have full discussion. We have difference of opinion before the Congress. by the time the Congress is held, we have more or less thrashed out all the differences.
How do you thrash it out? In informal meetings?
In group meetings. All the resolutions, all the policy has to be discussed. From the central committee, all the resolutions are referred to the local branches for their full discussion, policy, general policy, and their report. You see. So we have to, and central committee members, we participate in those meetings to explain the central committee policy to the membership, rank and file membership.
Just one last fear, Dr. Vikramasinghe. Elections today, I was wondering how different they are from, say, elections in 31, in 47, in what senses, in what ways they have changed.
I'll have to think over, and I will meet again and I tell you. There are fundamental changes have taken place, but I would like to evaluate it after more thinking. We'll meet.
End of interview. Typist, please copy the following as they pertain to unrecorded snatches of information during the interview. First, a bit of information given at the time I asked the question about Vaithyalingam. Section which will be found in the first track of this recording, that is first track, second interview. Copy as follows. I, continuing my questions after the recording was switched off, I asked him whether Vaidyalingam's influence had anything to do with the Browderistic ideas which prevailed in the Communist Party immediately after the war. He said, typist, I think you better look at the question just before the recorder was switched off. Maybe I asked it, I presented it then, but whatever it is, Dr. Vikramasinghe said that Vaidyalingam was one of those who presented these who represented Browderism within the party and wanted the party to cooperate with the National Congress in the belief that these bourgeoisie were basically nationalist and anti-imperialist, and that by cooperating with these elements one would help in the transformation of society from a capitalist state to that of a socialist state. That is in accordance with Browderism, which argued that capitalism as it had developed in Western countries would evolve into socialism. That
by cooperating with the bourgeois, the communists could bring up help in this evolution. Vaidyalingam had presented, had with quote many others in the party, close quote, had argued in this manner. I remarked that it was this sort of I remarked that the fact that he had these sort of ideas is not surprising in view of the fact that he was now, he had now drifted away with the party, drifted away from the party. Dr. Vikramasinghe chipped in and said he was still with the party and that he had communist affiliations. But I added that he was not an active party worker now as before, and that and Dr. Vikramasinghe agreed. Second set of unrecorded information found on the second track of this, second track, at the time when I asked him, at the spot when I asked him about the formation of a coalition government between the LSSP and the SLFP in 1963-64. Copy as follows. I remarked that I he said that the right wing of the SLFP had opposed a coalition with all the Marxist parties and did not want the communists in. And the LSSP leadership were willing to go in alone. I made a long comment as follows. I said that I had some information, not altogether reliable information, that after the United Front had been formed, Philip Kunawadna had, through Nasiyat Thero, put out feelers to the SLFP, put out feelers to the SLFP leadership with regard to the formation of a junta, of a, and that Mrs. Bandaranaike had even entertained these ideas, but that Ilangaratna had been against it and had suggested that they coalesce parliamentarily with the Marxist parties. Dr. Vikramasinghe confirmed the gist of this statement with modifications. He said that Felix Dias and Philip and Nanasiya were planning to form a kind of dictatorship, and that this had led to the coalition talks. In fact, that the fear of this kind of dictatorships had also had a bearing on the discussions. The right wing of the SLFP, CP De Silva crowd, had, however, been strongly against the inclusion of the Communist Party. In fact, the right wing of the SLFP had been strongly against any coalition at all. But when they found that the SLFP position in parliament was strong and that they simply could not carry on, they had agreed to the compromise solution of including the LSSP only. The CP had entered these coalition talks, willing even to have Philip within the coalition government. Their argument was that a coalition was necessary, a coalition of all the groups was necessary, that if Mrs. Bandaranaike gave way to the right-wing opposition, it would reduce the value of a coalition of the coalition, that the psychological effect of an all-Marxist coalition with the SLFP would be greater, that the right-wing pressures on this occasion were only a first step in a series of steps by which they would bring the government down, as eventually proved. That a broad front was the best. I inquired whether Mrs. Bandaranaike's position had been, and said that I thought she was willing to include all the groups. He confirmed that. I remarked that when I was in Oxford, Mrs. Bandaranaike had arrived there, and on an official visit to the Oxford Society Union, and that Eric Abrahams, a West Indian Labourite left-wing president of the Union, had met her and spoken to her for a fairly lengthy period, and that subsequently, while having tea or coffee in my room, I had questioned him on this and asked him what he thought of Mrs. Bandaranaike. He said, basically, I think she was a progressive. Dr. Vikramasinghe agreed quite positively that he thought she was that. With continuing to speak about the coalition maneuvers, he said that the Communist Party were willing to join the government even without receiving a portfolio. Their emphasis had not been on portfolios but on the question of broad question of coalition. They said that whether they accepted a portfolio or not would have to be decided afterwards, and that the decision should be the decision of the Communist Party as a whole. They might opt to accept a minister without portfolio. They might not want a portfolio. They were willing to coalesce, however, and remain within the coalition as a separate entity, but one which would influence policy, with or without portfolios. At the talks, even Philip had said that he did not insist on a portfolio. However, there were many other people who thought only in terms of a coalition with a division of portfolios. I said that I thought Philip had demanded portfolios and pitched his demands much too high. But he said this was not so. It was the LSSP who demanded, who insisted on portfolios, key portfolios. And many people in the SLFP also thought purely in terms of portfolios. Thus, when the CP put forward this view that they did not want portfolios, it led some SLFPers even to argue that in that case it was not necessary that they should be within the coalition on an official basis. They could unofficially and de facto help the government. After all, it would be the same as if they were within the government officially and not having portfolios. I made some inquiries as to the manner in which the talks were conducted and how many attended them. I asked whether Philip had been sole representative of the MEP. Dr. Vikramasinghe said that William Silver was also there. As for the CP, he said in response to a further query, Peter Kennerman and himself had been the representatives. As for the LSSP, he said it was NM and Colby. But on further thought, he said that he thought that there were a few others. Leslie, I inquired, and he said he thought Leslie was there. In fact, he added that Leslie had been willing at the latter stage of the discussions to include Philip in the cabinet as well. That is to say, after the SLFP right wing had insisted that Philip and the Communist Party should be excluded, and after the LSSP had accepted this position, Leslie had tried to get in Philip at least into the cabinet. But this had not worked out. In the meanwhile, Philip, finding things going against him, had begun to abuse both the other Marxists and the government. And Dr. Vikramasinghe said that it would appear that by now, then he decided that cooperation with UNP would be more fruitful. A reflection of this policy was the fact that they refused to join the combined opposition meetings. That is to say, the various parties in the opposition, the LSSP, UNP and the Tamil parties, had met together as an opposition group. But CP, while seated in the opposition, had not joined these meetings. They had followed an independent line, generally favorable to the government because it was a progressive one. I inquired whether in this period there was conflict and struggle between the Samasamajis, the communists and Philip's groups on the trade union front, especially in the port. He said that was true. There had been there was some conflict. I remarked that Philip could have used his advantageous position in the government to against the CP and the Sama Samajist. And he said that this was so, that Philip had adopted a sectarian attitude and sought to strengthen his party and the unions he controlled, and a result had hindered genuine trade, the trade union movement, and not given scope for various trade union demands. This had led to the strikes of the period, and he nodded. He nodded his head. He said that the Communist Party had been willing to work with the was favorable to the government despite all the abuse which Philip directed against them. He remarked that the government itself had been hindered by Philip's policy in that there had occasionally been fights between Philip's men themselves. In that Manin Market, for instance, Manin Market, for instance, had been reduced to a state of confusion, and Felix had to shift the stores to another place. The point at which the next recording begins is after his statement that Philip had used his further statement by Dr. Vikramasinghe, that Philip had used his governmental position to disrupt their, i.e., the Communist Party unions.
End of comments.